Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey guys, we're here with the Hollywood Life podcast. We have a very special guest today, and we're so excited to talk with her. But before I introduce her, I am going to say hi to my co-anchor, Ali Stagnita. Hi, Ali.
Hi, Bonnie. Yes, I'm so excited to have this guest. And I'm so excited we are nearing the Tony Awards on June 11th. And so we're continuing to have some of the nominees join us on the podcast since we're here in New York City, and we love our live theater performers and this resurgence of Broadway that we've seen post-pandemic. So we're so excited to have our special guest here today. Bonnie, I'll let you introduce her.
Okay, and yes, you know, I think this is really, really important that we're celebrating Broadway because, as we all know, the pandemic meant no Broadway for way too long. And so everyone's got to come back to New York, and everybody has got to just right now meet our Tony nominee who is here today, Miriam Silverman, and she is in the Tony nominated play, The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window. Welcome, Miriam.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're really thrilled to have you. And we're so we're so proud of you. And
it was a really fierce season, especially for plays and especially for revivals this Tony Awards season. And so to be nominated and recognized, I think, is huge. And it even kind of came, Miriam, as a surprise to you. Can you tell us a little bit about receiving the nomination? I love this story. We talked at Meet the Nominees about it, and you're teaching at NYU in the midst of all of it.
Yeah. I was teaching. I knew that I had to go teach my final class. I was not going to miss it. And I knew that the nominations were being announced that morning. And if you had asked me a week before, I probably wouldn't have even thought to listen to them live. I just wasn't really truly on my radar. And then Time Out New York came out with this thing saying that they were predicting that I would get nominated. And then all these people mistakenly started congratulating me, thinking that was the real thing. And then people started sending me these little clips from Twitter or something saying that, you know, the other actresses in my role had been nominated. So it started suddenly being like something I should pay attention to. So I did watch. I did watch that morning with my husband. First, I had to drop off my little one at school. And then I watched with my husband, and we got to cry and scream and laugh and do all the things for about 15 minutes. And then I had to go teach.
That is so wonderful. And you were nominated for actress in a featured role in a play. And yeah, I mean, the competition was incredibly stiff because it's been a fantastic season on Broadway. And now, so you had 15 minutes and you had to go and teach your class. You teach theater at AIU. Did you have to go and take the subway and know that you were?
I treated myself to a car. I treated myself to a car because I figured I'd have some phone calls I could make on the way.
And good thinking.
Yeah. And I also had, you know, the students had all seen the show at BAM and they had all predicted that I would get nominated. We had this whole thing where I had said, no guys, you know, it's not happening. And I had promised to buy them all donuts if I did. So I also had to make a stop at the donut pub for donuts.
Yes. I know exactly where that is too. I live essentially on NYU's campus. So
Yep. Good donuts. Oh, man.
Yeah. And they were like, we are so glad that you followed through and got us donuts.
Right.
That's the best part. They actually had also brought donuts.
Oh,
it was so sweet. Like I came in and there was, so many donuts. Everybody had donuts. I was way too buzzing and excited and in disbelief to eat a donut at that point. I thought sugar will do me in this moment. So I had a donut later.
Right.
Well, and this has been a very long journey for you. I mean, aside from the fact that you have been a working actress, for a long time, but the play, was written by Lorraine Hansberry, who is a very acclaimed and very young African-American playwright and writer. And she wrote A Raisin in the Sun, which is a much better known play, but she died sadly at the age of 34. And, you know, you were kind of working on bringing this play, like you were what they call attached to the play for a long time.
Yeah, I did this play with the same director, with Annie Kaufman, one of my absolute favorite directors with whom I've collaborated more than anyone else. I think I worked with her more, including a production of this play at the Goodman Theater in 2016. And we had a wonderful time. It was a great production, fell in love with the play. And she had been working on getting it done for years before that. And then the Goodman production went so well, there was energy behind it. We had a couple of near misses of having it done in New York in the year or two after that. And then I think things died down and then the pandemic. And it was I'll sort of never forget when she called me and said, hey, we're gonna do this like really low key, just informal reading with Oscar Isaac and Rachel Brosnahan of the play. And I was like, wow. That doesn't sound low key at all.
Yeah, like, what a big name.
And we did the reading, I think, at Oscar's office. And then 9 months later, we were in rehearsals at BAM, something like that. So I think there had even been one reading before that I had been out of town and couldn't do. So it was it was a journey. And it's been marvelous. It's just been, it's a play that I love so much to get to return to it years later and to have more life experience to bring to it, to explore it with these different actors and a different production, same director with a deep understanding and love for the play. But it's just been a testament to how incredible the play is, that there's just been more to mine and uncover and discover in the writing.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like too, just the story that it's telling at this time on Broadway is even just more profound. Can you talk a little bit about that and why you feel like this, like it's hitting home maybe even more right now?
And Miriam, if you could kind of explain to our listeners, like what the play is about and like how you see what the play is about and why it's so profound now.
Yeah, I'm strangely terrible at summarizing this play and that we know it so well, but because there's just so much in it. But I think one of a way to describe it is that it's about this bohemian couple living in Greenwich Village. Sidney Brustein of the title is a Jewish liberal intellectual. We meet him at the beginning of the play in a sort of, both of them are in a place of shifting and changing. Iris is struggling against sort of trying to find herself, both within the marriage she's, you know, married to an older man who is sort of dominant intellectually and in many ways. And he is trying to discover who he is and wants to be in the world. He's come out of one failed business venture and is starting to run a newspaper, and yet insisting that despite his radical beliefs and liberalism, that he's not going to use the paper as a tool to sway anybody politically. And that becomes a kind of main argument of the play, which is, what are we doing with our voices? What are we doing with our time and our energy, and where are we spending it? I think ultimately a lot happens in the play, and there are a lot of themes, but I think it's ultimately about liberals and people on the left and everybody in general being moved to actually engage in a meaningful and deep way with the world, with society, with politics, just what real change looks like, rather than giving air to it, but actually being part, really being part of making change happen.
Mm-hmm. And it's now you play, it's about, so Iris, who is the wife of this main character, and she's trying to find herself. Mm-hmm. She has two sisters, mm-hmm. and you are her older sister, Mavis, and you are very, you know, prim and proper, conservative. You're married to a wealthy man. You've got kids. Like, you have kind of taken on a very traditional role in your relationship. And it seems that you are from the, at the beginning of the play, you know, in kind of, I guess, a happy place, what a lot of women, or at that time, especially, this was written in the 60s, would think is a, you know, a happy place. Hey, lots of women today think that, would think that too. Iris is more bohemian, trying to find herself and a free spirit. And then you have a younger sister who is really struggled and is quite beautiful. And it's, I mean, I think she's become a call girl or a, like a, yeah. So there's women in three different places in life, but it's like, it's not what it seems, really. There's a lot going on, especially in your character. And first of all, you look so different in, when they have you all done up in your prim and proper clothes yes. and your pillbox, you're like Jackie yes. Kennedy pillbox dress. How would you describe your character? But it's fascinating what you learn about her as you watch this play.
Yeah. She is, I mean, you described it right. She is very like, Park Avenue, starchy, conservative, stuck in her ways, sort of glamorous in a conservative way, right? Very, very expensive taste, I think. The pillbox hat, the jewelry, the nicely tailored dresses, all of that. Cares a lot about presentation. I mean, the moment we meet her, she's bringing Iris a nice fancy dress. And Iris is saying, I don't wear that stuff. I'm not going to wear it. And it's like, literally Mavis forces her into it just to sort of say, no, you can pull this off. This would look good. You're sort of introduced to her as somebody who's trying to foist her ways on her bohemian sister. And you also hear me talking a lot about my concern for our little sister, who is, we learn, a sex worker. And then in the journey of the play, though, I think Hansberry is so brilliant in setting this character up, because she's introduced as a kind of foil or antagonist almost to the bohemian, yeah. cool, you know, artsy people. And then she has a couple comments before she leaves that I think usually makes the audience, when I do it successfully, makes the audience go, huh? What? You know, there's something that shifts. Oh, we can't just dismiss her anymore. And then that brilliant second act scene with Sydney, where you learn there's a lot more to Mavis's life and existence, and a lot more she's grappling with than anybody knew and anybody would expect just at first glance, right?
Mm-hmm. I feel like, too, you know, the show speaks to today, and that, like, there are reasons why people believe what they believe and lean certain ways. And it's sometimes, you know, beyond just like so black and white. And I love that theater specifically, especially right now, is showing that and bringing that to light. I mean, between this show, which obviously was written in the 60s, like it's nothing new, but it's hitting maybe even a little bit more profoundly right now. Shucked is another one, you know, just looking at these like differences of opinion and seeing that it doesn't make somebody maybe a bad person. And I think that's amazing. Why did you relate maybe more to Mavis' character? Not relate necessarily, but align to like play her versus Iris or the sister, the other sister.
Oh, yeah.
Gloria.
So I think some of it quite simply is that when Annie sent me the play, she was thinking of me for Mavis. I had played a kind of funny and sort of obnoxious older sister in a play with Annie the year before. And I think so she just, it was a, seemed like a logical fit. Miriam is much more of an Iris type. Oh. I'm a lot more kind of like, chaotic and, that's so fun. That's been right. So, to me, it's always more fun if I get to sort of really step into something that is different, where I have to, the costumes and thinking about just posture and the way she carries herself and the way she speaks and communicates, you know, that I think Mavis worked very diligently at trying to create a bit of a persona that would match the lifestyle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All well, the sisters sorry. Have, you know, but I think that for me, just as an actor, to get to mm-hmm. be in a character where it feels different than me, it's always the most fun, because there's just something, there's a lot to kind of work on and craft.
Mm-hmm. You see that she appears to have a lot of privilege, which she does,
yeah,
in her role in society, and yet her life is not at all like what Ali said. It's not black and white. She has made a tremendous amount of compromises in order to be able to live that life of privilege. But what I also found was so interesting about the play was that the struggle of this main character, Sidney Brustein, in whether to decide to just be this sort of liberal on the side and personally feel we have to change, you know, we have to fight against racism and classism. However, he was really sexist, which all the men were in the play. But today, we're seeing that today. We're still fighting for racial equality. We're fighting so much for gender equality, gender acceptance. Like, all of these things didn't go away in the decades since the play was written. And people who are liberal still have to make a decision. Are they going to be quiet, or are they going to stand up and do more to try and fight to make change, to make the world a better place for everybody?
Yeah, that's beautifully said. I think that's so right on. And I think the kind of prophetic quality of Lorraine Hansberry writing this play when she did, and how relevant it is now. And it's fascinating to me, because that the Messiah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Misogyny and the sexism that Sidney and the male characters exhibit, in some ways it's fascinating to do right now, because I think it's a challenge for the audience. It could be something where people could go, oh well, God, that's terrible, I wouldn't behave like that. But the play is asking more. The play is asking you to get inside of and have empathy for all of the characters, and Sidney being the lead character of the play, you're going on his journey, and so you have to go on the journey, thorns and all. It's like it's such a brilliant ask and demand that the playwright is making of the audience, which is you have to actually become complicit with all of these characters, right? There's this, and so Sidney, in those moments where he's cruel to Iris, it's like, you hopefully people are realizing, okay, maybe I'm not so overt in my whatever, but listen, if somebody watches this play and were to think, huh, yeah, the female execs at my workplace are not paid the same as the male execs, you know, I know that's a stretch, yeah. But I think there's something about being really bold in, you know, even with Mavis, her racism, her homophobia, her anti-Semitism, it's all pretty much out there. And then Lorraine is also asking you to have empathy for her and understanding. And it's really complex and demanding in, I think, a way that a play can do what, to me, theater has the power to do, which is to leave people with a lot to grapple with that then maybe will hopefully change something. There's this great line Sydney says to me in our second act scene where he says, you know, we got it. The world's about to crack right down the middle and we have to change or fall into the crack. We have to change or fall into the crack. And I think, you know, Mavis's response is, you know, before that, my line before that to him is, you know, I can't help it. It's the way I feel. You can't expect people to change that fast. And then he says, we have to change. And to me, that's like, that exchange says everything about this play. And it's my hope, you know, my, as an actor, you kind of come up with a narrative of what happens to that character after they leave. And I always, there's something that does feel like a shift in Mavis when hearing that from Sydney every night, that it's not like she's gonna leave and suddenly be a completely different person, but there has, something has changed for her in that with him, in the intimacy of just revealing her, the truth of her life, and then seeing how profoundly moved and hurt he is at her kind of refusal to accept potentially a Black suitor to her sister. And then that I feel like something will start to change. It's saying, I can't change that fast. Maybe it's optimistic of me, but I have to be optimistic about it and think, okay, she actually might leave and start to think, okay, I do have to change. Something does have to shift. He's right.
Mm-hmm. I think that the, like, similarly to what you just said, like just how Hansberry developed these characters throughout the show, it shows that they are not just one-sided, you know, and that's like humanity. Like it's art mimicking life. Not everybody is just, you know, that or this. They have so much depth to them, and it's trying to, like, you know, like you just said, align your values with your behaviors.
Yeah.
I think it's just a big message that comes through it.
And, you know, I think it's really interesting that today's audience is getting reintroduced to Lorraine Hansberry, because, you know, she died, I guess, in the early 60s, but it's like she was such a fascinating character as a person. Mm-hmm. And she, in some ways, there were similarities between her, I guess, and Iris, in that she was, you know, a younger woman married to a more established Jewish man who was an intellectual. And she, you know, was finding herself and using her writing. And also she was African-American and finding herself within society and speaking out. But she didn't live to get, of course, to realize her full potential. And it's interesting too, though, that even though they divorced, she actually was a lesbian and she finally came out and, I guess, kind of came out, which was a big deal in those days.
Yes.
And, but that he remained totally protective of her and of her legacy.
Yeah. I think their relationship, their partnership, it clearly transcended what we think of as sort of traditional marriage terms, right? And so the fact that, he did that, she came out, she had female lovers, there was an understanding between them, and yet he remained her fiercest advocate. It's funny, the thing about her being Iris, because I think that's true, and I also think she absolutely wrote herself into Sydney too. There's so much, and this is something that is not my original idea. We were
it's the main character, the intellectual.
Yeah, we were so lucky to have Joy Gresham, who is actually Robert Nemiroff, so Lorraine's ex-husband, Robert's stepdaughter, Joy Gresham, who runs the Literary Trust, the Hansberry Literary Trust. Joy was involved with us every step of the way in both productions, and she would have people come in, all these experts come in and talk to us. I've read Imani Perry's biography of Lorraine twice. I mean, it's just, there's so much about the full life she lived in 34 years, you know, it's kind of, it's almost makes one like ashamed, because she just like the life she lived and all her writing, the essays, the political activism, everything she did. So a lot of that, I think she put into Sydney. I think she put herself into Alton. I think she put herself into David and some, there were elements of her as a person and her beliefs and her argument as an artist in a lot of the characters. It's kind of, in some ways, why the characters are all so well crafted and drawn. They're so full and complex, all of them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I see that. I see that as you're explaining. Okay, now let's get down to how are you preparing for Tony's night? Are you take a dress? Like
I tried on a bunch of dresses yesterday, and it was so exciting, and I got a bunch of pictures. I'm working with an amazing stylist that was recommended. Now this is all new to me, but she pulled a bunch of gorgeous dresses from different designers that were, you know, were sent for me to try on, and it's a work in progress, but we already have some great options. It's an interesting thing to see kind of what vibe you're going for, right? It's because it could be a traditional, very simple, elegant gown. It could be a big kind of statement dress, anything in between. So who knows? I mean, part of what I love about being an actor is that I just feel differently. And there's a kind of, the fun of being an actor is sort of being a chameleon. So I really have to think about how does Miriam want to show up on Tony night and nail that down soon. But it's fun. And
is this your first Tony Awards?
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I've been on Broadway once before in a play called Junk that we did at Lincoln Center by Ayad Akhtar. And the play was actually nominated for Best New Play, but it was a huge cast and we didn't all go. I think we had a party and watched it together. So this is definitely my first time attending the Tonys.
Oh my gosh. And
will you prepare a speech just in case?
You know, I guess I have to. that feels unlucky, but then what would be worse was on the off chance that they do call my name, being unprepared would be pretty lame.
Well, you've got a good chance. Don't say that. You've got a good chance here.
I think I will have to think about that and prepare something.
Well, we're so excited too that the Tonys and the Writers Guild have come up with plan to be able to have the Tonys actually air, because that was pretty touch and go. Did you have any thoughts about that? Because I know that your husband actually works with SAG.
Yeah, my husband's a labor organizer for SAG-AFTRA, and we were huge. I was very involved with the Actors Equity. So this is a union. It's a super pro union household. You know, so standing with the WGA on everything. But of course, it was so disappointing when the waiver was initially denied, and we thought, oh, you know, there is just on a personal level, I finally, you know, my shot at the Tonys, they're canceled. So it was, and also just the potential fallout to the industry. You know, as you said at the beginning, Bonnie, theaters,
ticket sales.
Yeah, like we're finally crawling back, but a lot of shows that are running right now need the Tonys to happen to continue, for tours to be born out of it. You know, there's so many bigger considerations for the industry and all the different jobs, not just the performers, but the people backstage, everyone involved. So it's a huge relief. And I'm so glad that they came up with a compromise that everybody feels good about and that we get to go and celebrate the theater that night.
I'm so glad too. And I think that you pointed out something that's really important, that how many jobs depend on the show going on Broadway going on and on getting that boost. And so I'm glad that a compromise was found for all of those reasons. Now, on a personal note, I want to just ask you about your father. Wasn't your father like a major journalist? I mean,
he would be so thrilled to hear you say that. My dad worked his entire career for the Associated Press. and was an editor for, you know, a desk editor on the national desk for many years. My memory as a kid was that he would get to cover the space shuttle launches, and he'd go down to Cape Canaveral and bring us back freeze-dried astronaut food. And he would cover the Olympics and travel for that. And then for many years, he rose to deputy managing editor. And in the last 2 years of his career, he was the managing editor of the AP.
That's huge.
Yeah. We were very proud. He started when he was in his 20s as like a stringer reporter. So it was an incredible career he had there.
Wow. I'm sure he has a lot of feelings about what's going on with the press now.
Yeah.
Well, as journalists, as a journalist, I don't want to speak for Ali, but I respect that kind of a career so much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I worry so much about whether or not other generations are going to continue to be able to have these careers doing good journalism.
Yeah, I know.
That's so true. But sticking a little bit back to the show and just like your like balance of life right now. So you have a child, you are.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Dang, but now like pulled out at least. And so how are you balancing it all? Like 8 shows a week, childcare, like teaching, that's a lot. And a lot on your voice too. I mean, just speaking.
Yeah. Thanks for speaking to us.
Oh yeah. It's okay. You know, I'm going to knock on wood because I have usually had, my voice usually is not delicate. I say that, and I totally got a sinus infection that led to laryngitis when we were at BAM, and I had to go on steroids and sort of talk like this for a show or two, but I didn't miss a show. I was determined not to. But I had really good training in grad school. So I think that's part of why. And while I usually teach acting, I've also taught voice over the years. And so I feel like I know what to do. But the exhaustion is real from being a parent. I have 2 kids. I have a 9-year-old and a 4-year-old. And the 4-year-old likes to get up very early, very early. So that's been a little rough because I get, you know, no matter how quickly I try to get out of the theater, I get home late. And often depending on after school and all that, because we live in Brooklyn, there are a lot of days where I only see them for that first hour or so in the morning. And then, you know, have to go to the theater just as they're getting home from school. So it is an interesting balance. You know, I used to do theater all the time, and then the pandemic, you know, COVID shut down the play I was doing at the Atlantic Theater. My son had just turned 1. And so he hasn't known this life, right? The last few years, I really did mostly some TV and film work and teaching. I was desperate to do a play again, but I knew finding the balance would be hard again with 2 and with my son being older and my daughter being older. You know, when my daughter was little, she could just come to the theater with me all the time and just be around. But when you have school and she has her own life now, you know, she's 9, she has activities. So the schedule is harder. And I knew that I wouldn't go back to doing plays, like 3 plays a year, the way I used to, that it would have to be something really, really special and important to me. And so luckily this one came along. We're constantly figuring out how to balance it. And I know the kids will be very happy come July when mama's home for bedtime every night again for a while. So, and they'll just learn. We're all learning how to make the best of it. Cause also, especially my older kid, she's so proud and so excited.
I bet she is. Yeah. I guess it will be televised. So yeah, they can stay up and watch, and see mommy on TV.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll love, especially your daughter, when you get dressed up in your dress, hair and makeup. Yeah. That'll be just a treat.
I sent her some via my husband. She doesn't have devices at all, but I sent my husband some pictures of the dresses I tried on yesterday to get her thumbs up, and she was involved. She was she came to our opening night actually, and came to the party afterwards, and that was one of my favorite memories to date. Like, it was incredible to have her there. She had such a blast.
Oh, that is so special. Well, we are so excited, Miriam, to see you take over the Tonys red carpet, and fingers crossed, stage on June 11th. And
I'm rooting for you.
Thank you so much.
We will be rooting for you. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
It was lovely to see you again, Ellie, and lovely to meet you, Bonnie. It's really been a pleasure to talk. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been such a pleasure for us, and good luck.
Thank you.
We will be cheering. We're excited for you.
Thank you
for sharing with us.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye, guys. Thank you.